Tell me, Fengreen, how far brought you High Hereford on his way?
I brought High Hereford, if you call him so, but to the next highway, and there I left him.
And say, what store of parting tears were shed?
Faith, none for me. Except the northeast wind, which then blew bitterly against our face, awaked the sleepy room. And so, by chance, did grace our hollow parting with a tear.
What said our cousin when you parted with him?
Farewell. And for my heart disdained that my tongue should so profane the word, that taught me craft to counterfeit oppression of such grief. That word seemed buried in my sorrow's grave. Marry, would the word farewell have lengthened hours and added years to his short banishment, he shall have had a volume of farewells. But since it would not, he had none of me.
He is our cousin, but 'tis doubt when time shall call him home from banishment, whether our kinsmen come to see his friends. Ourself and Bushy observed his courtship to the common people, how he did seem to dive into their hearts with humble and familiar courtesy. What reverence he did throw away on slaves, wooing poor craftsmen with the craft of smiles and patient underbearing of his fortune, as 'twere to banish their effects with him. Off goes his bonnet to an oyster wench. A brace of draymen bid God speed him well, and had the tribute of his supple knee with thanks, my countrymen, my loving friends. As were our England in reversion his, and he our subject's next degree in hope.
Well, he is gone, and with him go these thoughts. Now for the rebels which stand out in Ireland. Expedient manage must be made, my liege, ere further leisure yield them further means for their advantage, and your highness loss.
We will ourself in person to this war, and for our coffers, with too great a court and liberal largess, are grown somewhat light. We are enforced to farm our royal realm, the revenue whereof shall furnish us for our affairs in hand. If that come short, our substitutes at home shall have blank charters, whereto, when they shall know what men are rich, they shall subscribe them for large sums of gold and send them after to supply our wants. For we will make for Ireland presently. Ah, Bushy, what news?
Old John of Gaunt is grievous sick, my lord. Suddenly taken, and has sent post haste to entreat your majesty to visit him.
Where lies he?
At Ely House.
Now put it God in the physician's mind to help him to his grave immediately. The lining of his coppers shall make coats to deck our soldiers for these Irish wars. Come, gentlemen, let's go visit him. Pray God we may make haste and come too late.
King is come. Deal mildly with his youth, for young hot colts being rage do rage the more.
What comfort, man? How is't with aged Gaunt?
Oh, how that name befits my composition. Old Gaunt indeed, and Gaunt in being old. Within me grief hath kept a tedious fast, and who abstains from meat that is not gaunt? For sleeping England, long time have I watched, watching breeds leanness. Leanness is all gaunt.
Can sick men play so nicely with their names?
No. Misery makes sport to mock itself. Since thou dost seek to kill my name in me, I mock my name, great king, to flatter thee.
Should dying men flatter those that live?
No, no. Men living flatter those that die.
Thou now art dying. Sayest thou flatterest me?
Oh, no. Thou diest, though I the sicker be.
I am in health. I breathe and see thee ill.
No. He that made me knows I see thee ill. Ill in myself to see, and in thee seeing ill. Thy deathbed is no lesser than thy land, wherein thou liest in reputation sick. A thousand flatterers sit within thy crown, whose compass is no bigger than thy head, and yet, encaged in so small a verge, the waste is no whit lesser than thy land. Oh, had thy grandsire, with a prophet's eye, seen how his son's son should destroy his sons from forth thy reach, he would have laid thy shame, deposing thee before thou wert possessed, which art possessed now, to depose thyself. Why, cousin, wert thou regent of the world, it were a shame to let this land thy lease. But for thy world enjoying but this land, is it not more than shame to shame it so? England, bound in with a triumphant sea, whose rocky shore beats back the envious siege of watery Neptune, is now bound in with shame, with inky blots and rotten parchment bonds. Landlord of England art thou now, not king. Thy state of law is bondslave to the law, and thou...
A lunatic!
Lean-witted fool! Presuming on an ague's privilege, darest with thy frozen admonition make pale our cheek, chasing the royal blood with fury from his native residence. Now, by my seat's right royal majesty, wert thou not brother to great Edward's son, this tongue that runs so roundly in thy head should run thy head from thy unreverend shoulders?
Oh, spare me not, my brother Edward's son, for that I was his father Edward's son. That blood already, like the pelican, thou hast tapped out and drunkenly caroused. Join with the present sickness that I have, and thy unkindness be like crooked age to crop at once a too long withered flower. Live in thy shame, but die not shame with thee. These words hereafter thy tormentors be. Convey me to my bed, then to my grave. Love they to live that love and honor have.
And let them die that age and sullens have. For both hast thou, and both become the grave.
I do beseech your majesty, impute his words to wayward sickliness and age in him. He loves you on my life, and holds you dear as Harry, Duke of Hereford, were he here.
Right, you say true. As Hereford's love, so his. As theirs, so mine, and all be as it is.
My liege, old Gaunt commends him to your majesty.
What says he?
Nay, nothing. All is said. His tongue is now a stringless instrument. Words, life, and all. Old Lancaster hath spent.
Be York the next that must be bankrupt so. Though death be poor, it ends a mortal woe.
The ripest fruit first falls, and so doth he. His time is spent, our pilgrimage must be. So much for that. Now for our Irish wars. We must supplant those rough, rug-headed kerns which live like venom, where no venom else but only they have privilege to live. And for these great affairs do ask some charge. Towards our assistance we do seize to us the plate, coin, revenues, and movables whereof our uncle Gaunt did stand possessed.
How long shall I be patient? Oh, how long shall tender duty make me suffer wrong?
Why, uncle, what's the matter?
My liege, pardon me if you please. If not, I please not to be pardoned, am content with all. Seek you to seize and gripe into your hands the royalties and rights of banished Hereford? Is not Gaunt dead and doth not Hereford live? Was not Gaunt just and is not Harry true? Did not the one deserve to have an heir? Is not his heir a well-deserving son? Take Hereford's rights away and take from time his charters and his customary rights. Let not tomorrow then ensue today. Be not thyself. For how art thou a king, but by fair sequence and succession? Now, afore God, God forbid I say true, if you do wrongfully seize Hereford's rights, you pluck 1,000 dangers on your head. You lose 1,000 well-disposed hearts. Prick my tender patience to those thoughts which honor and allegiance cannot think.
Think what you will. We seize into our hands his plate, his goods, his money, and his lands. And we create an absence of ourself. Our Uncle York, Lord Governor of England. For he is just and always loved us well. Come on, my queen. Tomorrow must we part. Be merry, for our time of stay is short.
Now, afore God, 'tis shame such wrongs are borne, in him a royal prince, and many more of noble blood in this declining land. Then thus, I have from Port La Blanca Bay in Britain received intelligence that Harry, Duke of Hereford, and 8 tall ships, 3,000 men of war, are making hither with all due expedience, and shortly mean to touch our northern shore. Perhaps they had ere this, but that they stay the first departing of the king for Ireland. If then we shall shake off our slavish yoke, imp out our drooping country's broken wing, redeem from broken pawn a blemished crown, wipe off the dust that hides our scepter's guilt, and make high majesty look like itself. Away with me in post to Ravenspur.
Madam, your majesty is too much sad. You promised when you parted with the king to lay aside self-harming heaviness and entertain a cheerful disposition.
To please the king, I did. To please myself, I cannot do it. Yet I know no cause why I should welcome such a guest as grief, save bidding farewell to so sweet a guest as my sweet Richard. Yet, again, methinks some unborn sorrow, ripe in fortune's womb, is coming towards me, and my inward soul with nothing trembles. At something it grieves, more than with parting from my lord the king.
Each substance of a grief hath 20 shadows, which shows like grief itself, but is not so. Thrice gracious queen, more than your lord's departure, weep not, more's not seen. Or if it be, it is with false sorrow's eye, which, for things true, weeps things imaginary.
It may be so. But yet my inward soul persuades me it is otherwise. Howe'er it be, I cannot but be sad. So heavy sad.
God save your majesty.
And
well met, gentlemen.
I hope the king is not yet shipped for Ireland.
Why hopest thou so? 'Tis better hope he is. For his designs crave haste, his haste good hope. Then wherefore dost thou hope he is not shipped?
That he, our hope, might have retired his power and driven into despair an enemy's hope, who strongly hath set footing in this land. The banished Bolingbroke repeals himself, and with uplifted arms is safe arrived at Ravenspur. Oh,
now God in heaven forbid.
Oh, madam, 'tis too true. And that is worse. The Lord Northumberland, his son, young Henry Percy, the Lord of Ross, Beaumont, and Willoughby, with all their powerful friends, are fled to him.
Why have you not proclaimed Northumberland and all the rest revolted faction traitors?
We have. Whereupon the Earl of Worcester hath broke his staff, resigned his stewardship, and all the household servants fled with him to Bolingbroke.
So, Green, thou art the midwife to my woe, and Bolingbroke my sorrow's dismal heir. Now hath my soul brought forth her prodigy, and I, a gasping new-delivered mother, have woe to woe, sorrow to sorrow joined.
Despair not, madam.
Who shall hinder me? I will despair and be at enmity with cousining hope. He is a flatterer, a parasite, a keeper back of death, who gently would dissolve the bands of life, which false hopes linger in extremity.
Here comes the Duke of York.
With signs of war about his aged neck. Oh, full of careful business are his looks. Uncle, for God's sake, speak comfortable words.
Comforts in heaven. We are on the earth where nothing lives but crosses, care, and grief. Your husband, he is gone to save far off, while others come to make him lose at home. Here am I left to underprop his land, who, weak with age, cannot support myself. Now comes the sick hour that his surfeit made. Now shall he try his friends that flattered him. I know not what to do. I would to God so my untruth had not provoked him to it. The king had cut off my head with my brothers. What, are there no posts dispatched for Ireland? How shall we do for money for these wars? Now go, fellow, get thee home. Provide some carts and bring away the armor that is there. Gentlemen, will you go muster men? If I know how or which way to order these affairs, thus thrust disorderly into my hands, never believe me. Both are my kinsmen. The one is my sovereign, whom both my oath and duty bids defend. The other again is my kinsman, whom the king hath wronged, whom conscience and my kindred bids to right. Well, somewhat we must do. Come, cousin, I'll dispose of you. Gentlemen, go muster up your men and meet me presently at Berkeley Castle. I should to Plashy too, but time will not permit. All is uneven, and everything is left at 6 and 7.
The wind sits fair for news to go to Ireland, but none returns. For us to levy power proportionable to the enemy is all impossible.
Besides our nearness to the king in love, is near the hate of those love not the king. I will for refuge straight to Bristol Castle.
Thither will I with you. For little office will the hateful commons perform for us, except like curs, to tear us all to pieces. Unless York thrives to beat back Bolingbroke.
Alas, poor Duke. The task he undertakes is numbering sands and drinking oceans dry. Where one on his side fights, thousands will fly.
My noble uncle.
Show me thy humble heart and not thy knee, whose duty is deceivable and false.
My gracious uncle.
Dut, grace me no grace, nor uncle me no uncle. I am no traitor's uncle. And that word, grace, in an ungracious mouth is but profane. Why have those banished and forbidden legs dared once to touch a dust of England's ground? But then more why? Why have they dared to march so many miles upon her peaceful bosom, frighting her pale-faced villages with war and ostentation of despised arms? Comest thou because the anointed king is hence? Why, foolish boy, the king is left behind, and in my loyal bosom lies his power. Were I but now the lord of such hot youth as when brave Gaunt, thy father, and myself rescued the Black Prince, that young Mars of men, from forth the ranks of many thousand French, oh, then how quickly should this arm of mine, now prisoner to the palsy, chastise thee, and minister correction to thy fault.
My gracious uncle, let me know my fault. On what condition stands it, and wherein?
Even in condition of the worst degree, in gross rebellion and detested treason, thou art a banished man. Here art come before the expiration of thy time in braving arms against thy sovereign.
As I was banished Hereford. But as I come for Lancaster. And noble uncle, I beseech your grace, look on my wrongs with an indifferent eye. You are my father. For methinks in you I see old Gaunt alive. How then, my father, will you permit that I shall stand condemned, a wandering vagabond, my rights and royalties plucked from my arms perforce, and given away to upstart unthrifts? Wherefore was I born? If that my cousin king be king of England, it must be granted, I am Duke of Lancaster. You have a son, O Merle, my noble cousin. Had you first died, and he been thus trod down, he should have found his uncle Gaunt a father, to rouse his wrongs and chase them to the bay. I am denied to sue my livery here, and yet my letters patents give me leave. My father's goods are all distrained and sold, and these and all are all amiss employed. What would you have me do? I am a subject, and I challenge law. Attorneys are denied me. And therefore, personally, I lay my claim to my inheritance of free descent.
The noble Duke hath been too much abused.
My lords of England, let me tell you this. I have had feeling of my cousin's wrongs and labored all I could to do him right. But in this kind, to come in braving arms, be his own carver, and cut out his way to find out right with wrongs it may not be. And you that do abet him in this kind cherish rebellion and are rebels all.
The noble Duke hath sworn his coming is for his own. And for the right of that, we have strongly sworn to give him aid. And let him ne'er see joy that breaks that oath.
Well, I see the issue of these arms. I cannot mend it. I must needs confess, because my power is weak and all ill left. But if I could, by him that gave me life, I would attach you all and make you stoop unto the sovereign mercy of the king. But since I cannot be it known to you, I do remain as neuter. So, fare you well. Unless you please to enter in the castle and there repose you for this night.
An offer, uncle, that we will accept. But we must win your grace to go with us to Bristol Castle, which they say is held by Bushy, Bagot, and their accomplices, the caterpillars of the Commonwealth, which I have sworn to weed and pluck away.
Maybe I will go with you. But yet I'll pause, for I am loath to break our country's laws. Nor friends nor foes to me welcome you are. Things past redress are now with me past care.
Bring forth these men. Bushy and Green, I will not vex your souls, since presently your souls must part your bodies, with too much urging your pernicious lives, for 'twere no charity. And to wash your blood from off my hands, here in the view of men, I will unfold some causes of your deaths.
You have misled a prince.
A royal king. A happy gentleman in blood and lineaments, by you unhappied and disfigured clean. You have, in manner with your sinful hours, made a divorce betwixt his queen and him, broke the possession of a royal bed, and stained the beauty of a fair queen's cheeks with tears drawn from her eyes by your foul wrongs. Myself, a prince, by fortune of my birth, near to the king in blood and near in love, till you did make him misinterpret me, have stooped my neck under your injuries and sighed my English breath in foreign clouds, eating the bitter bread of banishment, whilst you have fed upon my seigneuries, disparked my parks, and felled my forest woods, from my own windows torn my household coat, raised out my emprise, leaving me no sign save men's opinions and my living blood to show the world I am a gentleman. This and much more than twice, all this condemns you to the death. See them delivered over to execution and the hand of death.
More welcome is the stroke of death to me than Bolingbroke to England. Lords, farewell.
My comfort is that heaven will take our souls and plague injustice with the pains of hell.
My Lord Northumberland, see them dispatched. Uncle, you say the queen is at your house. For God's sake, fairly let her be entreated. Tell her I send to her my kind commends. Take special care my greetings be delivered.
A gentleman of mine I have dispatched with letters of your love to her at large.
Thanks, gentle uncle. Come, lords, away to fight with Glendower and his complices. A while to work, and after, holiday.
Barclifley Castle, call they this at hand?
Yea, my lord. How brooks your grace the air after your late tossing on the breaking seas?
Needs must. I like it well. I weep for joy to stand upon my kingdom once again. Dear earth, I do salute thee with my hand. Though rebels wound thee with their horses' hoofs. As a long-parted mother with her child plays fondly with her tears and smiles in meeting, so weeping, smiling, greet I thee, my earth, and do thee favors with my royal hand. Feed not thy sovereign's foes, my gentle earth, nor with thy sweets comfort his ravenous sense, but let thy spiders that suck up thy venom and heavy-gated toads lie in their way, doing annoyance to the treacherous feet which with usurping steps do trample thee. Yield stinging nettles to mine enemies, and when they from thy bosom pluck a flower. Guard it, I pray thee, with a lurking adder, whose double tongue may with a mortal touch throw death upon thy sovereign's enemies. Mock not my senseless conjuration, lords. This earth shall have a feeling, and these stones prove armed soldiers ere her native king shall falter under foul rebellion's arms.
Fear not, my lord. That power that made you king hath power to keep you king, in spite of all.
When the searching eye of heaven is hid behind the globe that lights the lower world, then thieves and robbers range abroad unseen, in murders and in outrage bloody here. But when from under this terrestrial ball he fires the proud tops of the eastern pines and darts his light through every guilty hole, then murders, treasons, and detested sins, the cloak of night being plucked from off their backs, stand bare and naked, trembling at themselves. So when this thief, this traitor Bolingbroke, who all this while hath reveled in the night whilst we were wandering with the Antipodes, shall see us rising in our throne the east, his treasons will sit blushing in his face, not able to endure the sight of day, but self-affrighted, tremble at his sin. Not all the water in the rough, rude sea can wash the balm from an anointed king. The breath of worldly men cannot depose the deputy elected by the Lord. For every man that Bolingbroke hath pressed to lift shrewd steel against our golden crown, God for his Richard hath in heavenly pay a glorious angel. Then if angels fight, weak men must fall, for heaven still guards the right. Now speak, Carlyle. How far off lies Salisbury's power?
Nor near nor farther off, my gracious lord, than this weak arm. Discomfort guides my tongue and bids me speak of nothing but despair. One day, too late, I fear, my noble lord, hath clouded all thy happy days on earth. Oh, call back yesterday. Bid time return, and thou shalt have 12,000 fighting men. Today, unhappy day, too late, o'erthrows thy joys, friends, fortune, and thy state. For all the Welshmen, hearing thou wert dead, art gone to Bolingbroke, dispersed and fled.
But now the blood of 20,000 men did triumph in my face, and they are fled. All souls that will be safe, fly from my side, for time has set a blot upon my pride.
Comfort, my liege, remember who you are.
I had forgot myself. Am I not king? Awake, thou coward majesty, thou sleepst. Is not the king's name 20,000 names? Arm, my name. A puny subject strikes at thy great glory. Look not to the ground, ye favorites of the king. Are we not high? High be our thoughts. I know my uncle York hath power enough to serve our turn. But who comes here?
More health and happiness betide my liege than can my care-tuned tongue deliver him.
Mine ear is open and my heart prepared. The worst is worldly loss thou canst unfold. Say, is my kingdom lost? Why, 'twas my care. And what loss is it to be rid of care? strives Bolingbroke to be as great as we, greater he shall not be. If he serve God, we'll serve him too and be his fellow so. Revolt our subjects. Oh, that we cannot mend. They break their faith to God as well as us. Cry woe, destruction, ruin, loss, decay. The worst is death. And death will have his day.
Glad am I that your highness is so armed to bear the tidings of calamity. Like an unseasonable stormy day which makes the silver rivers drown their shores, as if the world were all dissolved to tears, so high above his limits swells the rage of Bolingbroke, covering your fearful land with hard, bright steel, and hearts harder than steel. White beards have armed their thin and hairless scalps against thy majesty, and boys with women's voices strike to speak big and clap their female joints in stiff, unwieldy arms. Against thy crown, the very beadsmen learn to bend their bows of double fatal yew. Against thy state, yea, distaff women manage rusty bills. Against thy seat, both young and old rebel. And all goes worse than I have power to tell.
Too well thou tell'st a tale so ill. Where is the Earl of Wiltshire? Where's Bagot? What has become of Bushy? Where is Green? They have let the dangerous enemy measure our confines with such peaceful steps. If we prevail, their head shall pay for it. I warrant they have made their peace with Bolingbroke.
Peace have they made with him indeed, my lord.
Oh, villains. Vipers. Damned without redemption. Dogs easily won to fawn on any man. Snakes in my heart, blood warm that sting my heart. Three Judases, each one thrice worse than Judas. Would they make peace? Terrible hell make war upon their spotted souls for this offense.
Sweet love, I see, changing his property, turns to the sourest and most deadly hate. Again uncurse their souls. Their peace is made with heads and not with hands. Those whom you curse have felt the worst of death's destroying wound and lie full low, graved in the hollow ground.
Is Bushy, Green, and the Earl of Wiltshire dead?
Yea. All of them at Bristow lost their heads.
Of comfort, no man speak. Let's talk of graves, of worms and epitaphs. Make dust our paper, and with rainy eyes write sorrow on the bosom of the earth. Let's choose executors and talk of wills. And yet not so. For what can we bequeath save our deposed bodies to the ground? Our lands, our lives, and all are Bolingbroke's. And nothing can we call our own save death. And that small model of the barren earth which serves as paste and cover to our bones. For God's sake, let us sit upon the ground and tell sad stories of the death of kings. How some have been deposed, some slain in war, some haunted by the ghosts they have deposed, some poisoned by their wives. Some sleeping killed. All murdered. For within the hollow crown that runs the mortal temples of a king keeps death his court. And there the antic sits, scoffing his state and grinning at his pomp, allowing him a breath, a little scene to monarchize, be feared and kill with looks, infusing him with self and vain conceit, as if this flesh which walls about our life were brass impregnable. And humored thus, comes at the last, and with a little pin, bores through his castle walls, and farewell, king. Cover your heads, and mock not flesh and blood with solemn reverence. Throw away respect, tradition, form, and ceremonious duty. For you have but mistook me all this while. I live with bread like you. Feel want, taste grief, need friends. Subjected thus, how can you say to me I am a king?
My lord, wise men ne'er sit and wail their woes, but presently prevent the ways to wail. To fear the foe, since fear oppresses strength, gives in your weakness strength unto your foe. And so your follies fight against yourself. Fear and be slain, no worth can come to fight. And fight and die as death, destroying death. Where fearing, dying, pays death servile breath.
Thou chides me well. Proud Bolingbroke, I come to change blows with thee for our day of doom. This ague fit of fear is overblown. An easy task it is to win our own. Scroope, where lies our Uncle York with his power? Speak sweetly, man, although thy looks be sour.
Men judge by the complexion of the sky, the state and inclination of the day. So may you, by my dull and heavy eye. My tongue hath but a heavier tale to say. I play the torturer by small and small to lengthen out the worst that must be spoken. Your Uncle York is joined with Bolingbroke, and all your northern castles yielded up, and all your southern gentlemen in arms upon his faction.
Thou hast said enough. What say you now? What comfort have we now? By heaven, I'll hate him everlastingly that bids me be of comfort any more. Go to Flint Castle. There I'll pine away. A king woe's slave shall kingly woe obey. That power I have discharged, and let him go to ear the land that has some hope to grow, for I have none. Let no man speak again to alter this, for counsel is but vain. Discharge my followers. Let them hence away from Richard's night to Bolingbroke's fair day.
So that, by this intelligence, we learn the Welshmen are dispersed, and Salisbury is gone to meet the king, who lately landed with some few private friends upon this coast.
The news is very fair and good, my lord. Richard, not far from hence, hath hid his head.
It would beseem the Lord Northumberland to say King Richard. Alack, the heavy day when such a sacred king should hide his head.
Your grace mistakes. Only to be brief left I his title out.
The time hath been. Would you have been so brief with him?
He would have been so brief with you to shorten you for taking so the head your whole head's length.
Mistake not, uncle, further than you should.
Take not, good cousin, further than you should, lest you mistake. The heavens are on our heads.
I know it, uncle, and oppose not myself against their will. My lord Northumberland, go to the rude ribs of that ancient castle. Through brazen trumpet, send the breath of parley into his ruined ears, and thus deliver. Henry Bolingbroke, on both his knees, doth kiss King Richard's hand, and send allegiance and true faith of heart to his royal person. Hither come, even at his feet, to lay my arms and power, provided that my banishment repealed and lands restored again be freely granted. If not, I'll use the advantage of my power and lay the summer's dust with showers of blood rained from the wounds of slaughtered Englishmen, which, how far off from the mind of Bolingbroke it is, such crimson tempest should bedrench the fresh green lap of fair King Richard's land, my stooping duty tenderly shall show. Go signify as much, while here we march upon the grassy carpet of this plain. Let's march without the noise of threatening drum, that from this castle's tattered battlements our fair appointments may be well perused. Methinks King Richard and myself should meet with no less terror than the elements of fire and water, when their thundering shark at meeting tears the cloudy cheeks of heaven. Be he the fire, I will be the yielding water. The rage be his, whilst on the earth I rain my waters. On the earth, and not on him. March on, and mark King Richard how he looks. See, King Richard doth himself appear, as doth the blushing, discontented sun from out the fiery portal of the east. When he perceives the envious clouds are bent to dim his glory, and to stain the track of his bright passage to the Occident.
Yet looks he like a king. Behold his eye. As bright as is the eagle's, lightens forth controlling majesty. Alack, alack for woe that any harm should stain so fair a show.
We are amazed, and thus long have we stood to watch the fearful bending of thy knee, because we thought ourselves thy lawful king. And if we be, how dare thy joints forget to pay their awful duty to our presence? If we be not, show us the hand of God that hath dismissed us from our stewardship, for well we know, no hand of blood and bone can gripe the sacred handle of our scepter, unless he do profane, steal, or usurp. And though you think that all, as you have done, have torn their souls by turning them from us, and we are barren and bereft of friends, yet know, my master, God omnipotent is mustering in his clouds on our behalf armies of pestilence, and they shall strike your children yet unborn and unbegot, that lift your vassal hands against my head and threat the glory of my precious crown. Tell Bolingbroke, for yon may think he is, that every stride he makes upon my land is dangerous treason. He has come to open the purple testament of bleeding war. But ere the crown he looked for live in peace, 10,000 bloody crowns of mother's sons shall ill become the flower of England's face, change the complexion of her maid pale peace to scarlet indignation, and bedew her pasture's grass with faithful English blood.
The King of Heaven forbid our Lord the King should so with civil and uncivil arms be rushed upon. Thy thrice noble cousin, Harry Bolingbroke, doth humbly kiss thy hand. And by the honorable tomb he swears, that stands upon your royal grandsire's bones, and by the royalties of both your bloods, currents that spring from one most gracious head, and by the buried hand of warlike Gaunt, and by the worth and honor of himself, comprising all that may be sworn or said, his coming hither hath no further scope than for his lineal royalties, and to beg enfranchisement immediate on his knees, which on thy royal party, granted once, his glittering arms he will commend to rust, his barbed steeds to stables, and his heart to faithful service of your majesty. This swears he, as he is a prince, is just. And as I am a gentleman, I credit him.
What must the king do now? Must he submit? The king shall do it. Must he be deposed? The king shall be contented. Must he lose the name of king? For God's name, let it go. I'll give my jewels for a set of beads, my gorgeous palace for a hermitage, my gay apparel for an armsman's gown, my figured goblets for a dish of wood, my scepter for a palmer's walking staff, my subjects for a pair of carved saints, and my large kingdom for a little grave, a little grave, an obscure grave, or I'll be buried in the king's highway, some way of common trade, where subjects' feet may hourly trample on their sovereign's head, for on my heart they tread now whilst I live, and buried once, why not upon my head? Would not this ill do well? Well, well, I see I talk but idly and you mock at me. Most mighty prince, my lord Northumberland, what says King Bolingbroke? Will his majesty give Richard leave to live till Richard die? You make a leg, and Bolingbroke says I.
My lord, in the base court he doth attend to speak with you. May it please you to come down.
Down? Down I come, like blistering Phaeton, wanting the manage of unruly jades. In the base court? Base court, where kings grow base to come at traitor's call and do them grace. In the base court? Come down? Down, court! Down, king! For night owls shriek where a mounting lark should sing.
What says his majesty?
Sorrow and grief of heart makes him speak fondly, like a frantic man. Yet he is come.
Stand all apart and show fair duty to his majesty. My gracious lord.
Fair cousin, you debase your princely knee to make the base earth proud with kissing it. Me rather had my heart might feel your love,
than my unpleased eye see your courtesy. Up, cousin. Up. Your heart is up, I know, thus high at least, although your knee below.
My gracious lord, I come but for mine own.
Your own is yours, and I am yours, and all.
So far be mine, my most redoubted lord, as my true service shall deserve your love.
Well you deserved. They well deserve to have that know the strongest and surest way to get. Uncle, give me your hand. May dry your eyes. Tears show their love, but want their remedies. Cousin, I am too young to be your father, though you are old enough to be my heir. What you will have, I'll give, and willing too. For do we must what force will have us do. Set on towards London, cousin, is it so?
Yea, my good lord.
And I must not say no.
What sport shall we devise here in this garden to drive away the heavy thought of care?
Madam, we will play at bowls.
It will make me think the world is full of rubs and that my fortune runs against the bias.
Madam, we'll dance.
My legs can keep no measure in delight, when my poor heart no measure keeps in grief. Therefore, no dancing, girls, some other sport.
Madam, we'll tell tales.
Of sorrow or of joy?
Of either, madam.
Of neither, girl. For if of joy being altogether wanting, it doth remember me the more of sorrow. For if of grief being altogether had, it adds more sorrow to my want of joy. For what I have I need not to repeat, and what I want, it boots not to complain.
Madam, I'll sing.
'Tis well that thou hast cause. But thou shouldst please me better, wouldst thou weep?
I could weep, madam. Would it do you good?
And I could sing. Would weeping do me good? And never borrow any tear of thee.
But stay. Here come the gardeners. Let's step into the shadow of these trees.
My wretchedness unto a row of pins they'll talk of state.
For everyone doth so against a change.
Woe is forerun with woe.
Go bind thou up yon dangling apricocks, which, like unruly children, make their sire stoop with oppression of their prodigal weight. Give some supportance to the bending twigs. Go thou, and, like an executioner, cut off the heads of two fast-growing sprays that look too lofty in our commonwealth. All must be even in our government. You, thus employed, I will go root away the noisome weeds, which, without profit, suck the soil fertility from wholesome flowers.
Why should we, in the compass of a pale, keep law and form and due proportion, showing as in a model our firm estate, when our sea-walled garden, the whole land is full of weeds, her fairest flowers choked up, her fruit tress unpruned, her hedges ruined, her knots disordered, and her wholesome herbs swarming with caterpillars.
Hold thy peace. He that hath suffered this disordered spring hath now himself met with the fall of leaf. The weeds that his broad-spreading leaves did shelter, that seemed in eating him to hold him up, are plucked up, root and all, by Bolingbroke. I mean the Earl of Wiltshire, bushy, green.
What? Are they dead?
They are. And Bolingbroke hath seized the wasteful king. Oh, what pity it is.
that he had not so trimmed and dressed his land as we this garden at time of year do wound the bark, the skin of our fruit trees, lest, being overproud with sap and blood, with too much riches it confound itself. Had he done so to great and growing men, they might have lived to bear and he to taste their fruits of duty. Superfluous branches we lop away that bearing boughs may live. Had he done so, himself had borne the crown, which waste of idle hours hath quite thrown down.
What, think you the king shall be deposed?
Depressed he is already, and deposed his doubt he will be. Letters came last night to a dear friend of the Duke of York's that tell black tidings.
Thou old Adam's likeness, set to dress this garden?
Madam.
How dares thy harsh, rude tongue sound this unpleasing news? What Eve, what serpent hath suggested thee to make a second fall of cursed man? Why dost thou say King Richard is deposed? Darest thou, thou little better thing than earth, divine his downfall? Say where, when, and how camest thou by this ill tidings? Speak, thou wretch.
Pardon me, madam. Little joy have I to breathe this news, yet what I say is true. King Richard, he is in the mighty hold of Bolingbroke. Their fortunes both are weighed. In your lord's scale is nothing but himself and a few vanities that make him light. But in the balance of the great Bolingbroke, besides himself are all the English peers. And with that odds, he weighs King Richard down. Post you to London, and you'll find it so. I speak no more than everyone doth know.
Nimble mischance, that art so light of foot. Doth not thy embassage belong to me? And am I last that knows it? Oh, thou think'st to serve me last, that I may longest keep thy sorrow in my breast. Come, ladies, go to meet at London, London's king in woe. What? Was I born to this? That my sad look should grace the triumph of great Bolingbroke? Gardener, for telling me these news of woe, pray God the plants thou grafts may never grow.
Poor queen, so that thy state might be no worse, I would my skill was subject to thy curse. Here did she fall a tear. Here in this place I'll set a bank of rue, sour herb of grace. Rue even for Ruth here shortly shall be seen in the remembrance of a weeping queen.
Great Duke of Lancaster, I come to thee from plume-plucked Richard, who with willing soul adopts the heir, and his high scepter yields to the possession of thy royal hand. Ascend his throne, descending now from him, and long live Henry of that name the fourth.
In God's name, I'll ascend the regal throne.
Mary, God forbid. Worst in this royal presence may I speak, yet best beseeming me to speak the truth. Would God that any in this noble presence were enough noble to be upright judge of noble Richard. Then true noblesse would learn him forbearance from so foul a wrong. What subject can give sentence on his king? And who sits here that is not Richard's subject? Thieves are not judged, but they are by to hear, although apparent guilt be seen in them. And shall the figure of God's majesty, his captain, steward, deputy elect, anointed, crowned, planted many years, be judged by subjects and inferior breath, and he himself not present? Oh, forfended God, that in a Christian climate, souls refined should show so heinous, black, obscene a deed.
I speak to subjects, and a subject speaks, stirred up by God thus boldly for his king. My lord of Hereford here, whom you call king, is a foul traitor to proud Hereford's king. And if you crown him, let me prophesy the blood of English shall manure the ground, and future ages groan for this foul act. Peace shall go sleep with Turks and infidels, and in this seat of peace, tumultuous wars shall kin with kin and kind with kind confound. Disorder, horror, fear, and mutiny shall here inhabit, and his land be called the Field of Golgotha and dead men's skulls. Oh, if you raise this house against this house, it will the woefulest division prove that ever fell upon this cursed earth. Prevent it. Resist it. Let it not be so, lest child's children cry against you woe.
Well have you argued, sir, and for your pains. Of capital treason we arrest you here. My lord of Westminster, be it your charge to keep him safely till his day of trial. May it please you, lords, to grant the commons' suit.
Fetch hither Richard, that in common view he may surrender, so we shall proceed without suspicion.
I will be his conduct.
Lords, you that hear are under our arrest. Procure your sureties for your days of answer. Little are we beholding to your love, and little looked for at your helping hands.
Alack, why am I sent for to a king before I have shook off the regal thoughts wherewith I reign? I hardly yet have learned to insinuate, flatter, bow, and bend my knee. Give sorrow leave a while to tutor me to this submission. Yet I well remember the favors of these men. Were they not mine? Did they not sometime cry, all hail to me? So Judas did to Christ. But he in 12 found truth in all but one. I in 12,000, none. God save the king! Will no man say amen? Am I both priest and clerk? Well then, amen. God save the king! Although I be not he, and yet, amen, if heaven do think in me. To do what service am I sent for hither?
To do that office of thine own goodwill which tarried majesty did make thee offer. The resignation of thy state and crown to Henry Bolingbroke.
Give me the crown. Here, cousin, seize the crown. Here, cousin, on this side, my hand. On that side, thine. Now is this golden crown like a deep well that owes two buckets filling one another. The emptier ever dancing in the air. The other down, unseen and full of water. That bucket down and full of tears am I, drinking my griefs whilst you mount up on high.
I thought you had been willing to resign.
My crown I am, but still my griefs are mine. You may my glories and my states depose, but not my griefs. Still am I king of those.
Part of your cares you give me with your crown.
Your cares set up do not pluck my cares down. My care is loss of care by old care done. Your care is gain of care by new care won. The cares I give I have, though given away, they tend the crown. Yet still with me they stay.
Are you contented to resign the crown?
No. For I must nothing be. Therefore, no. For I resign to thee. Now mark me how I will undo myself. I give this heavy weight from off my head, and this unwieldy scepter from my hand. The pride of kingly sway from out my heart. With my own tears I wash away my balm. With my own hands I give away my crown. With my own tongue deny my sacred state. And with my own breath release all duteous oaths. All pomp and majesty I do forswear. My manors, rents, revenues I forego. My acts, decrees, and statutes I deny. God pardon all oaths that are broke to me. God keep all vows unbroke are made to thee. Make me that nothing have with nothing grieve. And thou with all pleased that hast all achieved. Long mayest thou live in Richard's seat to sit, and soon lie Richard in an earthy pit. God save King Henry, unkinged Richard says, and send him many years of sunshine days. What more remains?
No more. But that you read these accusations and these grievous crimes committed by your person and your followers against the state and profit of this land, that by confessing them, the souls of men may deem that you are worthily deposed.
Must I do so? Must I ravel out my weaved-up follies? Gentle Northumberland, if thy offences were upon record, would it not shame thee in so fair a troop to read a lecture of them? If thou wouldst, there shouldst thou find one heinous article containing the deposing of a king and cracking the strong warrant of an oath marked with a blot damned in the book of heaven. Nay, all of you that stand and look upon me, whilst at my wretchedness doth base myself, though some of you, with Pilate, wash your hands, showing an outward pity. Yet you, Pilates, have here delivered me to my sour cross. And water cannot wash away your sin.
My lord, dispatch, read all these articles.
My eyes are full of tears. I cannot see. And yet salt water blinds them not so much, but they can see a sort of traitors here. Nay, if I turn mine eyes upon myself, I find myself a traitor with the rest. For I have given here my soul's consent to undeck the pompous body of a king, made glory base and sovereignty a slave, proud majesty a subject, state a peasant.
My lord.
No lord of thine, thou haughty insulting man. No. Or no man's lord. I have no name. No title. No, not that name was given me at the font, but 'tis usurped. I lack the heavy day, that I have worn so many winters out, and know not now what name to call myself. Oh, that I were a mockery king of snow, standing before the sun of Bolingbroke, to melt myself away in water drops. Good king, great king, and yet not greatly good. And if my word be sterling yet in England, let it command a mirror hither straight, that it may show me what a face I have, since it is bankrupt of his majesty.
Go, some of you, and fetch a looking glass.
Read o'er this paper while the glass doth come.
Fiend, thou torments me ere I come to hell.
Urge it no more, my lord Northumberland.
Commons will not then be satisfied.
They shall be satisfied. I'll read enough when I do see the very book indeed where all my sins are writ. And that's myself. Give me the glass, and therein will I read. No deeper wrinkles yet. Hath sorrow struck so many blows upon this face of mine and made no deeper wound? Oh, flattering glass, like to my followers in prosperity thou dost beguile me. Was this the face that like the sun did make beholders wink? Was this the face which faced so many follies that was at last outfaced by Bolingbroke? A brittle glory shineth in this face, as brittle as the glory is the face. For there it is, cracked into 100 shivers. Mark, silent king, the moral of this sport. How soon my sorrow hath destroyed my face.
The shadow of your sorrow hath destroyed the shadow of your face.
Say that again. The shadow of my sorrow. Let's see. Ah, it is very true. My grief lies all within. And these external manners of laments are merely shadows to the unseen grief that swells with silence in the tortured soul. Ah. There lies the substance. And I thank thee, King, for thy great bounty, that not only gives me cause to wail, but teaches me the way how to lament the cause. I'll beg one boon and then be gone and trouble you no more. Shall I obtain it?
Name it, fair cousin.
Fair cousin? I am greater than a king, for when I was a king, my flatterers were then but subjects. Being now a subject, I have a king here to my flatterer. Being so great, I have no need to beg.
Yet ask.
And shall I have?
You shall.
Then give me leave to go.
Whither?
Whither you will, so I were from your sight.
Go, some of you. Convey him to the tower.
Oh, good. Convey. Conveyors are you all that rise thus nimbly by a true king's fall.
On Wednesday next, we solemnly set down our coronation. Lords, prepare yourselves.
This way the king will come. This is the way to Julius Caesar's ill-erected tower, to whose flint bosom my condemned lord is doomed a prisoner by proud Bolingbroke. Here let us rest, if this rebellious earth have any resting for her true king's queen. But soft, but see, or rather do not see, my fair rose wither. Yet, look up. Behold, that you in pity may dissolve to dew and wash him fresh again with true love tears. Ah, thou, the model where old Troy did stand, thou map of honor, thou King Richard's tomb and not King Richard, thou most beauteous inn, why should hard-favored grief be lodged in thee when triumph is become an alehouse guest?
Join not with grief, fair woman. Do not so to make my end too sudden. Learn, good soul, to think our former state a happy dream, from which awaked the truth of what we are shows us but this. I am sworn brother, sweet, to grim necessity, and he and I must keep a league till death. Hie thee to France and cloister thee in some religious house. Our holy lives must win a new world's crown, which our profane hours here have stricken down.
What? Is my Richard both in shape and mind transformed and weakened? Hath Bolingbroke deposed thine intellect? Hath he been in thy heart? The lion dying thrusteth forth his paw and wounds the earth, if nothing else with rage to be o'erpowered. And wilt thou, pupil-like, take thy correction mildly, kiss the rod, and fawn on rage with base humility, which art a lion and the king of beasts?
A king of beasts, indeed. If aught but beasts, I had still been a happy king of men. Good sometime, queen, prepare thee hence for France. Think I am dead, and that even here thou takest, as from my deathbed, thy last living leave. In winter's tedious nights, sit by the fire with good old folks, and let them tell thee tales of woeful ages long ago betide. And ere thou bid good night, to quit their griefs, tell thou the lamentable tale of me, and send the hearers weeping to their beds. For why? The senseless brands will sympathize the heavy accent of thy moving tongue, and in compassion weep the fire out. And some will mourn in ashes, some coal black, for the deposing rightful king.
My lord, the mind of Bolingbroke is changed. You must to Pomfret, not unto the tower. And madam, there is order ta'en for you. With all swift speed, you must away to France.
Northumberland, thou ladder wherewithal the mounting Bolingbroke ascends my throne, the time shall not be many hours of age, more than it is, ere foul sin, fathering head, shall break into corruption. Thou shalt think, though he divide the realm and give thee half, it is too little helping him to all. He shall think that thou which knowest the way to plant unrightful kings will know again, being ne'er so little urged, another way to pluck him headlong from his usurped throne. The love of wicked friends converts to fear, that fear to hate, and hate turns one or both to worthy danger and deserved death.
My guilt be on my head, and there an end. Take leave and part, for you must part forthwith.
Doubly divorce. Bad men,
You violate a twofold marriage. Twixt my crown and me, and then betwixt me and my married wife. Let me unkiss the oath twixt thee and me. And yet not so, for with a kiss 'twas made. Part us, Northumberland. I towards the north, where shivering cold and sickness pines the clime, my wife to France, from whence set forth in pomp she came adorned hither like sweet May, sent back like Halamas or shortest of day.
Must we be divided? Must we part?
Aye. Hand from hand, my love, and heart from heart.
Banish us both, and send the king with me.
That was some love, but little policy.
Then whither he goes, thither let me go.
So two together weeping make one woe. Weep thou for me in France, I for thee here. Better far off than near, be ne'er than near. Go, count thy way with sighs, I mine with groans.
So longest way shall have the longest moans.
Twice for one step I'll groan, the way being short, and peace the way out with a heavy heart. Come, come. In wooing sorrow, let's be brief, since wedding it there is such length in grief. One kiss shall stop our mouths and dumbly part. Thus give I mine, and thus take I thy heart.
Give me mine own again. 'Twere no good part to take on me to keep and kill thy heart. So, now I have mine own again. Be gone, that I may strive to kill it with a groan.
We make woe wanton with this fond delay. Once more adieu. The rest let sorrow say.
My Lord York, you told me you would tell the rest, when weeping made you break the story off, of our two cousins coming into London.
Where did I leave?
At that sad stop, my Lord, where rude, misgoverned hands from window tops threw dust and rubbish on King Richard's head.
Then, as I said, the Duke, great Bolingbroke, mounted upon a hot and fiery steed, which his aspiring rider seemed to know, with slow but stately pace kept on his course, whilst all tongues cried, God save thee, Bolingbroke. You would have thought the very windows spake, so many greedy looks of young and old through casements darted their desiring eyes upon his visage. And that all the walls with painted imagery had said at once, Jesu preserve thee, welcome Bolingbroke. Whilst he, from one side to the other turning, bareheaded, lower than his proud steed's neck, bespake them thus, I thank you, countrymen. And thus, till doing, thus he passed along.
Alack, poor Richard. Where rode he the whilst?
As in a theatre, the eyes of men, after a well-graced actor leaves the stage, are idly bent on him that enters next, thinking his prattle to be tedious, Even so, or with much more contempt, men's eyes did scowl on Richard. No man cried, God save him. No joyful tongue gave him his welcome home. But dust was thrown upon his sacred head, which with such gentle sorrow he shook off, his face still combating with tears and smiles. The badges of his grief and patience. But had not God, for some strong purpose, steeled the hearts of men, they must perforce have melted, and barbarism itself have pitied him. But heaven hath a hand in these events, to whose high will we bound our calm contents. To Bolingbroke are we sworn subjects now, whose state and honor I for I allow.
Didst thou not mark the king, what words he spake? Have I no friend will rid me of this living fear? Was it not so?
These were his very words.
Have I no friend, quoth he. He spake it twice, and urged it twice together, did he not?
He did.
And speaking it, he wistly looked on me, as who should say, I would thou were the man that would divorce this terror from my heart. Meaning the king at Pomfret. Come, let's go. I am the king's friend, and will rid his foe.
I have been studying how I may compare this prison where I live unto the world. And for because the world is populous, and here is not a creature but myself, I cannot do it. Yet I'll hammer it out. My brain, I'll prove a female to my soul. My soul, the father. And these two beget a generation of still breeding thoughts. And these same thoughts people this little world in humors like the people of this world. For no thought is contented. The better sort, as thoughts of things divine, are intermixed with scruples, and do set the word itself against the word, as thus, come, little ones, and then again, it is as hard to come as for a camel to thread the postern of a small needle's eye. Thoughts tending to ambition, they do plot unlikely wonders. How these vain, weak nails may tear a passage through the flinty ribs of this hard world, my ragged prison walls. And for they cannot die in their own pride. Thoughts tending to content flatter themselves that they are not the first of fortune's slaves, nor shall not be the last. Like silly beggars, who sitting in the stocks, refuse their shame that many have, and others must sit there. And in this thought, they find a kind of ease, bearing their own misfortunes on the back of such as have before endured the like. Thus play I in one person many people, and none contented. Sometimes am I a king, then treason makes me wish myself a beggar, and so I am. Then crushing penury persuades me I was better when a king. Then am I king again, and by think that I am unking by Bolingbroke, and straight am nothing. But whate'er I be, nor I, nor any man that but man is, with nothing shall be pleased till he be eased with being nothing.
Music do I hear?
Keep time. How sour sweet music is when time is broke and no proportion kept. So is it in the music of men's lives. And here have I the daintiness of ear to hear time broke in a disordered string. But for the concord of my state and time, had not an ear to hear my true time broke.
I wasted time, and time doth now waste me.
For now hath time made me his numbering clock. My thoughts are minutes, and with sighs they jar their watches on unto my eyes, the outward watch, whereto my finger, like a dial's point, is pointing still in cleansing them from tears. Now, sir, the sound that tells what hour it is are clamorous groans which strike upon my heart, which is the bell. So sighs and tears and groans show minutes, times, and hours. But my time runs posting on in Bolingbroke's proud joy, whilst I stand fooling here his jack of a clock. This music mads me, bid it song no more. Though it hath hope madmen to their wits, in me it seems it will make wise men mad. Yet blessing on his heart that gives it me, for 'tis a sign of love. And love to Richard is a strange brooch in this all-hating world.
Dinner, my lord. Will it please you to fall to?
Taste of it first, as art wont to do.
My lord, I dare not. Sir Piers of Exton, who lately came from the king, commands the contrary.
The devil take Henry of Lancaster and thee! Patience is failing, I am weary of
help! Help! Help!
Richard of Bordeaux!
How now? What means death in this rude assault? Villain! Thy own hand yields thy death instrument. Go thou and fill another room in hell. Oh! That hand shall burn in never-quenching fire that staggers thus my person. Exton, thy fierce hand hath with the king's blood stained the king's own land.
Mount, mount, my soul. Thy seat is up on high, whilst my close flesh sinks downward, here to die.
As full of valor as of royal blood, those have I spilled. Oh, would the deed were good, For the devil that told me I did well says that this deed is chronicled in hell. This dead king to the living king I'll bear. Take hence the rest and give them burial here. Great king, within this coffin I present thy buried fear. Herein, all breathless, lies the mightiest of thy greatest enemies, Richard of Bordeaux, by me hither brought.
Exton, I thank thee not. Thou hast wrought a deed of slaughter with thy fatal hand. Upon my head and all this famous land.
From your own mouth, my lord, did I this deed.
They love not poison that do poison need. Nor do I thee. Though I did wish him dead, I hate the murderer. Love him murdered. A guilt of conscience take thou for thy labor, but neither my good word nor princely favor. With Cain go wander through shades of night, and never show thy head by day nor light. Lords, I protest my soul is full of woe, that blood should sprinkle me to make me grow. Come, mourn with me, for that I do lament, and put on sullen black incontinent. I'll make a voyage to the Holy Land to wash this blood off from my guilty hand. March sadly after. Grace my mournings here in weeping after this untimely bier.
The Tragedy of King Richard II by William Shakespeare. Peter Haworth played the part of Richard. Richard Irwin was Green, Michael Goldie, Bushy, and Sir Pierce of Exton. Ian Thorne, the Duke of York. Ivor Harries, John of Gaunt, and the Keeper of the Prison. Robert Clothier, the Earl of Northumberland. Noni Stewart, the Queen. Derek Ralston, Henry Bolingbroke. Roy Brinson, the Bishop of Carlisle, and the Second Gardener. Sam Payne, Sir Stephen Scroope, and Exton's servant. Gay Scrivener, the Lady-in-Waiting, and the Duchess of York. And Jack Amond, the First Gardener. The play was adapted by Donald Erickson. The program was produced in Vancouver by the CBC and directed by Gerald Newman.